Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
It's Monday, and that can mean only one thing on NPR News. Time for our weekly visit with Ken Rudin. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Ewan.
How goes the struggle? Oh, or I shouldn't really ask someone who's covering politics that, should I? Maybe.
I have no struggle at all. I'm not awake. I mean, I'm not asleep. It's keeping me wide awake for 20 hours a day. And I think the only struggle is for the candidates and everybody who believes in one of the two candidates.
Well, I have to tell you, every weekend I call back to Scotland to talk to my dad, and he invariably asks me what's going on with the U.S. presidential election, and in particular Donald Trump.
And Ewan, we ask that same question in this country every day as well.
But I always have lots to tell him, but there's rarely any clarity, and this last week seems to have been particularly muddying. Now, he's apparently planning a speech specifically on immigration this week, and that's good because he's got a lot to clear up. I mean, what's he been saying? What's his current position? Where's he going with this?
Well, look, Donald Trump's rise to the Republican nomination was predicated on the fact that he said, we build a wall between the U.S. and Mexico. Mexico would pay for it. And we expel or deport 11 million people who were here illegally. Now Donald Trump is saying, or his campaign has been saying, that maybe some of the good guys, the good people, can stay here and perhaps pay back taxes, which sounds very similar to what Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and maybe even Barack Obama has been saying. And he says, no. And when they were saying it, Donald Trump was saying, no, that's amnesty. But now it seems like Trump is backing away from it. His campaign strategist and his campaign management are all giving conflicting information of what it exactly means. So he is giving this speech on Wednesday, hopefully for him, to clarify what he's talking about.
Well, how important is that clarification? I mean, because for a long time, the Trump campaign has been able to move between what might have been, very hard stances, but he seems to have shifted a great deal over the last week, backwards and forwards. I mean, is this going to be kind of a pivotal moment in the campaign?
Well, that's a good question, because many of his supporters have been drawn to him because of his strong, unambiguous stand about immigration. If it seems like he's flip-flopping, or if it seems like he's trying to soften his rhetoric, soften his policies, well, then many of the hardliners who back him will say, wait a second, like Sarah Palin. I can't believe I'm quoting Sarah Palin, but Sarah Palin said the other day that she feels that, any kind of withdrawal or backing away by Donald Trump would hurt his campaign. And there's truth to that. But at the same time, he knows, and the people running his campaign know, that he cannot win with just the kind of coalition he's assembled so far. He has to broaden it, and perhaps that's what Wednesday's speech is going to go attempt to do.
But, of course, on the other side, if there's a voter who chose Donald Trump over, say, Jeb Bush or Ted Cruz in the primary because of immigration,
right,
aren't they going to feel kind of like he's pulled a fast one, they're being double-crossed?
Exactly. I mean, that's the risk. Look, there's no question that we've seen flip-flops in candidates in every presidential race. I mean, Hillary Clinton, of course, has been on, earlier in her career, she was for the war in Iraq. She was against same-sex marriage. She was for the trade deal. She was for the pipeline. But she has come along, perhaps moved towards more progressive positions in the last couple of months, if not the last couple of years. To talk about a radical shift by Donald Trump with 70 days to go in an issue that's been so crucial to his rise in politics is risky on so many accounts. And of course, you're exactly right. I mean, that's why we're going to be watching what happens on Wednesday. But even if he does back down from those early points, what does he really stand for? What does he really believe in? This guy was supposed to be beyond politics. He's not going to be the politics as usual kind of candidate. And if he's shifting to try to make his views more palatable to more voters, then he becomes like everybody else.
Well, of course, most people are probably thinking, well, he's looking at the numbers. I mean, what numbers are there out there that the campaign is trying to react to specifically?
Well, they're not good. I mean, if you look at the national polls, you can say, if you look at a national poll, I mean, I think last week in a CNN poll, it was Hillary Clinton up 44 to 43. That was just one state. Basically, Hillary Clinton has moved from the end of the Democratic convention from perhaps an 8-point lead nationally to maybe a 5-point lead. And then so the Trump says that's good for them. That's good for their side. But if you look at the battleground states, the key states that are going to determine this election, the Floridas, the Virginias, the New Hampshires, the Ohios, the Pennsylvanias, the Colorados, Hillary Clinton has a lead in every single swing state. Now, sometimes the lead is up to 11, 12 points in some states. Sometimes it's only 1 or 2 points. But the point is, not one of these key states does Donald Trump have a lead. And again, with 70, 71 days to go before the election, he has a long way to come back. But, of course, it's not unheard of to change the lead. We saw in 1980, for example, Jimmy Carter had a sizable lead over Ronald Reagan until the debates. And we know that millions and millions of people are going to watch the debates, which starts September 26th. That could be good news for Donald Trump, or it could make his numbers even worse.
I've been fascinated by the number of stories I've seen by very smart people saying, hold on, don't assume that this is over. We're a long way from that.
Well, you know something, not only does Donald Trump tell that to his supporters, but Hillary Clinton will say that to her supporters, too. Don't be complacent. Don't rely on polls on August 29th. I mean, August 29th is not October 29th. And, of course, with all these days to go, things can change. Again, you know, I mean, this is such an unpredictable race with such unpredictable candidates. And you have basically, you know, two candidates with so many high negatives that perhaps there's room for movement. But to say that this is over, you know, is wrong, and it would be wrong for the media to do that as well. Look, we want a competitive election. We want it because it's more to talk about. We don't want it to be a runaway. But in reality, it's not going to be a runaway because you have a Donald Trump appealing to these candidates to these voters who heretofore have been, you know, many, many states are longtime Democratic voters, but they are open to a kind of a Donald Trump economic message. And that's why he gave an economic message last week. And that's why he's talking about the immigration issue later this week.
Now, of course, we're getting to that time of year where there's more and more stories coming out, dug out by various investigative reporters tied to the candidates. And the AP published an investigation this week into who Hillary Clinton met with when she was Secretary of State and found quite a bit of overlap with donors from the Clinton Foundation. Does anything smell fishy about this to you?
What smells the most, to put it most charitably, is why the campaign doesn't see the potential for a conflict of interest that so many people who gave money to the Clinton Foundation somehow managed to meet with Hillary Clinton while she was Secretary of State, even though the Clinton campaign and the former First Lady herself say there's no connection between her role as Secretary of State and those who gave money to the foundation. The fact that Bill Clinton says when she's elected, the foundation will stop taking foreign donations. My goodness, don't they see a potential conflict right now? Why are the foreign donations still allowed to be accepted now? She should know better. I think the campaign should know better. But sometimes when it comes to certain things like the foundation, like Hillary Clinton's role in meeting these donors, she seems to have a blind eye to it, and I think that they're making a big mistake. If they want to talk about ethics, and I could spend hours and hours talking about the Donald Trump's ethics or lack of same, she should know better than to realize that the thing with the foundation doesn't get people a little nervous.
We have a caller on the line. Bob is with us from St. Paul. Bob, you have a question for Ken?
Yeah, thanks, Ken. This is another kind of investigatory-related item. It sounds like Steve Bannon, the campaign manager for Trump, has some issues regarding where he claims residency. And, of course, that ties into this whole, you know, these voter fraud assertions that Trump has been making. Do you think the fact that this has happened may take Trump away from this finger-pointing about voter fraud and the need to monitor the polls when the election starts?
Bob, I hate to say this, but the beginning of your question, somehow my connection, my phone connection just cut away when you began the question. Well, tell me about Steve Bannon.
Yeah, another investigatory-related story. The Guardian newspaper, I believe, is the one that first said had this information that he has claimed residence in places where he doesn't live.
Well, look, I can tell you tons of things about Steve Bannon, the things that he said while and written about while the executive editor of Breitbart News. I mean, there's no pretending that Breitbart News is a respected conservative outpost. It's really sometimes it deals in conspiracy theories that are just beyond the pale. So for Donald Trump to associate himself with people like with Breitbart News and Steve Bannon, having him as a top person in his campaign shows that, you know, I mean, basically he's not going to even bother playing defense. He's not going to even bother defending Steve Bannon. He's just going to go after Hillary Clinton, which is what Steve Bannon does for a living. And so whatever background problems that Steve Bannon does, look, obviously Donald Trump must have known that, otherwise he wouldn't have brought him on board. But it is, I was talking about the blind eye that about the Clintons and the foundations. My goodness, the blind eye that the Republicans have by welcoming a Steve Bannon to head up the campaign is just remarkable.
There's so much to talk about. I mean, we also have the report that came out over the weekend from the New York Times, which basically claimed that there were race-based rental policies with the Trump properties.
Oh yeah, we've known that for a long time. His father has been accused many times of violating the federal Housing Act, Housing Act regarding discrimination of properties. The Trump campaign, the Trump people, and Donald Trump himself will always say that has always been said, always said, this is not true. We don't discriminate. And yet the New York Times article talks about all the settlements they've made and ultimately had to allow African-Americans to live in their properties. But you know something? This story has been going on for years. The New York media has always been on this regarding Donald Trump well before he was a presidential candidate. And as with almost everything, he'll just say, I deny it. It's not true. It's hogwash. And of course, we talk about all these settlements that has gone on out of court and the amount of money they paid. But I think we'd learn a little more if he revealed his taxes. And of course, we're not going to see that anytime soon either.
But of course, timing is everything in a political campaign. And this comes out as he is making his very aggressive play to try and get African-American voters to back him.
But that's historic. I mean, we always talk about the October surprises, always stuff that people know about that is going to be released at the last moments, the last minutes of a campaign. Remember the news about George W. Bush's drunk driving arrest in 2000. I think that came out a week before the election in 2000 because people know it and try to save it for most to make the most damage. We're also talking about the we saw about the earlier hacks of the DNC and the Clinton campaign. If some people have certain damaging information, or at least what they think is damaging information, you know we're going to see that at the last few minutes of the campaign as well.
So, as you mentioned, we do have the we're within a month now of the first presidential debate. What are the campaigns doing now to get ready for that event at Hofstra?
I only know what I've been reading in the papers, and what I've been reading is fascinating. Hillary Clinton has taken a very serious look at these debates with all the look on the issues, all these position papers. She's meeting with top experts in defense and domestic policy stuff. She's practicing. She has a debate partner she's working out with. And Donald Trump loves to tell the fact that, you know, everything he knows, first of all, he's very smart, but everything he doesn't know, he learns from the Sunday talk shows. He doesn't seem, at least as of this moment, to be seriously preparing for this, and then this could be a bluff. Maybe he is seriously preparing for it, or maybe he's not. But again, as you say, we have less than a month to go before the first debate, September 26th, and I mean, you talk about Super Bowls. I guarantee that anybody who has a slight interest in politics we'll turn on those debates and just be glued to the set for those 90 minutes.
So we've been talking a lot about the presidential campaign, and so Hillary Clinton still holds a big lead in national polls. And
Not a big lead.
Well, a lead in national polls.
Right.
And then also in a lot of the battleground states. But What about the race for the Senate? I mean, what's in play there? What's most interesting to watch?
Boy, then I tell you that that's the I don't know why it's an unreported story, because that's a big one. I mean, a lot of Republicans, George W. Bush among them, say, look, maybe Donald Trump is not the best candidate we can come up with, and maybe we can't even stand Donald Trump, but we can't allow a Hillary Clinton presidency and a Democratic Congress. So in the battle for the Senate, 24 of the 34 seats that are up are held by Republicans. The Republicans have much more to lose. Only one Democratic seat of the 10 Democratic seats is considered vulnerable. That's the open seat that Harry Reid is giving up in Nevada. But the Democrats only need a net gain of 4 seats to win control of the Senate if Hillary Clinton is elected, 5 seats if it's Donald Trump. But there are so many vulnerable Republicans, Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire, Mark Kirk in Illinois, Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania, perhaps the Rubio seat in Florida, perhaps John McCain in Latino-heavy Arizona. There are a lot of Republican senators who are fighting for their lives, and they're not getting any help from the top of the ticket. So whatever happens in the presidential race, change of control of the Senate is definitely possible. Less so in the House. Democrats need a net gain of 30 seats in the House. That's very unlikely to happen, but we still expect Democratic pickups in the House. Watch the Senate, though. That's going to be the big battle. After the presidential race, the battle for the Senate is going to be crucial on November 8th.
Well, are you seeing any of these Senate races where people are doing extraordinary things to survive, and whilst maybe distancing themselves from the candidate?
You do. I don't think you've seen that with a Republican campaign since 1964 in Barry Goldwater. For example, Mark Kirk in Illinois, who's in a tough battle for re-election, is talking about, it says he will not vote for Donald Trump. Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, the last time Trump was there, Ron Johnson was nowhere to be found. Even people who have been giving lip service to Donald Trump, like John McCain, who still endorses him, still endorses Trump, but McCain is running scared. Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire doesn't know what to do. She's in a very tough battleground state. The polls there show her dead even. She's a good candidate, but again, when every Democratic attack links you, Kelly Ayotte, or any other Republican with Donald Trump, there's very little Republicans can do. Even good senators, strong senators like Rob Portman in Ohio, is in a very, very tough race because, again, he has an R next to his name and he's on the same ballot as Donald Trump.
So, of course, we also have to ask, what about control of the House of Representatives? I mean, that's a much bigger shift that would be needed, but there are also vulnerable people there.
There are. That's absolutely true. I mean, as I said, the Democrats need a net gain of 30. Most of the way the lines are drawn in the House races, most of them favor the incumbents because that's the way redistricting and gerrymandering has been going on this year. Maybe perhaps demographic changes in the country will change it and make the lines more susceptible to changes after the 2020 census. But look, right now, Democrats, there are a lot of Republicans in the House, too, who would love to coast to another term, but not when they have Donald Trump to worry about. So it's something to watch in the House. I think the Senate is more likely to turn over if either side does flip. But I do think the Democrats could pick up anywhere between 10 and 15 more seats in the House.
So we have the big immigration speech this week from Donald Trump. What else should we be watching out for in the next few days?
Well, you know, the strange thing with Donald Trump is that every time you say that it's a new Donald Trump, he's going to stay more on message, he's going to be less incendiary, he'll read from the teleprompter, then he'll just pick a fight with somebody like, I mean, we saw with the Kahn family during the conventions, with his fellow Republicans. He had his brutal attack on a Twitter attack, I should say, on Joe Scarborough of MSNBC the other day. Sometimes they desperately try to keep him reading the script, close to the script, but it's impossible to look. Donald Trump will be Donald Trump no matter what happens, and he cannot be controlled, even though you've had an assortment of campaign staffers and campaign chairmen trying to keep control over his outbursts. But you know how he's going to react. You never know how he's going to react. You never know what he's going to say, either during a debate or during a speech, or talking about how all the media are scum and things like that. So, You know, to say what to expect, that's one of the weirdest questions you could probably ask in 2016, because everything so far has been completely the unexpected.
Well, whatever it is, we'll get to talk to you about it next week.
And I'll be just as exasperated as I am today.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. He joins us every week at this time. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Ewan.
Take care.